You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the show, we'll hear from a guest who makes the case that invasive species aren't as bad as we make them out to be. In some cases, we should be embracing them, not fighting them.
First, studies say the United States by far outstrips every other developed nation in the rate of its food and fuel consumption.
Obesity rates in the U.S. are twice that of Europe, so too the CO2 emission levels. Our next guest is trying to figure out what lies at the root of this tendency toward overconsumption and what does it mean for the country's future.
Robert Parlberg joins us now. He is professor of political science at Wellesley College and adjunct professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School. He's the author of the book, The United States of Excess, Gluttony, and the Dark Side of American Exceptionalism. Robert, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Robert, this is one of the first studies to compare obesity and climate change side by side. What do you see as linking the two of those when you look at America's habits?
Now, the most immediate link is that in each case, the United States places much lower tax rates on the consumption of food or fuel compared to Europe, for example. In the United States, tax rates on petroleum consumption are only 1/6 as high as they are in France, and our gasoline tax rates are only 1/8 as high as they are in Western Europe. So we consume much more fossil fuel. When it comes to food, grocery taxes are essentially zero in the United States, while in Europe, value-added taxes are imposed. In Germany, they tax food consumption at a 7% rate. In Sweden and Denmark, at a 25% rate. So the most immediate explanation is Americans don't like to tax the consumption of food and fuel, and other rich countries are willing to do that.
So I guess the question there is why? Why would, say, European nations be willing to have higher gas tax, higher taxes on foods, and America less willing?
Well, I trace the lower American taxes on fossil fuels to the existence in the United States of a very large fossil fuel industry. The United States has reserves of petroleum, natural gas, and coal that are two or three times as large as those in all of Europe. So we have a huge industry that's grown up around these resources, and that industry's wealthy enough and politically influential enough to demand a very low rate of taxation on the products that it sells. When it comes to food, it's a little bit different. The United States is reluctant to impose taxes on food consumption, in part because of a populist tradition that such taxes would be considered regressive on the middle class and the poor. It's interesting, when anyone suggests putting a tax on soda consumption in the United States or on junk food, objections come from liberal Democrats and Tea Party Republicans alike. It's considered the wrong thing to do at both ends of the political spectrum. In Europe, they don't have as much compunction about taxing consumption of food or of any other consumer good. If you look at where taxes come from, in the United States, only 8% of all of our tax revenues come from taxes on consumption. In Europe, it's 20% of tax revenues that are much larger overall.
So is this a simple case of cause and effect? There are lower taxes, and therefore Americans use more fuel and eat more, or are there other key factors that are at play here?
Well, there are other key factors. The distinctiveness of America's political institutions also plays a role. In the United States, we have an 18th century constitution. It's a pre-industrial age constitution. It's sometimes described as the oldest living constitution in the world, but it's also the least copied. It's a constitution that gives those opposed to strong government action many more veto points, many more options for blocking public policy responses to things like the overconsumption of food and fuel. In the United States, we've tried repeatedly to reduce greenhouse gas emissions with, well, in 1993, a BTU tax proposed by the Clinton administration. In 2009, a cap-and-trade proposal from the Obama administration. In each case, the House of Representatives passed those measures, but they were then in each case blocked in the Senate. The United States just gives too many too many veto points to groups that don't want to take strong action against either obesity or climate change.
We're talking right now with Robert Perlberg, professor of political science at Wellesley College, talking about what he calls the dark side of American exceptionalism, and that is gluttony, especially when it comes to food habits leading to obesity and also fossil fuel consumption. And one thing you point out is that you think that America has favored, is leaning toward a policy of adaptation rather than mitigation. In other words, we're not trying to fix these problems so much anymore as you see it. We're just trying to adapt to them. Where do you think that's leading us?
Well, I see trouble ahead. What I predict, I don't favor this, but I predict it, is increased efforts by the United States not to reduce our overconsumption of food and fuel, but instead to adapt to the adverse consequences. When it comes to climate change, we'll make large, expensive new investments in the resilience of our coastal infrastructure. For example, what we did after Superstorm Sandy in 2012, Congress immediately voted $50 billion to rebuild the coastal infrastructure in ways that would be less vulnerable to the next storm. And you don't prevent climate change, but you try to get ready for its adverse consequences. When it comes to obesity, instead of growing reliance on diet and exercise, I expect the United States will increasingly rely on medications to treat the illnesses linked to obesity, illnesses such as cardiovascular disease or type 2 diabetes. We will make surgical interventions more available through better insurance coverage for those surgeries. We'll emphasize physical accommodations for those who are heavy and better protection against workplace discrimination. Those are good things by themselves, but they're no substitute for a prevention strategy, a mitigation strategy.
What do you see as the ultimate cost, just to take the obesity issue right now?
Well, if we try to adapt to the fact that 34% of our population is clinically obese, with new medications and better surgical interventions, for example, that's going to work well enough for Americans who are well-educated, have high income, and are sophisticated about how to access medical treatments and services. Already we've reduced mortality rates from type 2 diabetes in the United States among obese patients by half. But this approach won't work well for the Americans who are actually most prone to obesity, which is low-income citizens, less well-educated citizens, racial and ethnic minorities. These groups in America have never had adequate access to medical treatment and services, and so they'll be left behind. So our attempt to adapt to obesity is only going to accentuate unequal medical outcomes in the United States.
Now, over the course of American history, one idea that has been persistent has been this notion of American exceptionalism, that somehow America is different, a leader set apart from others. How do you see that playing out in the cases you're making right now with fuel and obesity?
Well, I think the fuel and obesity crises demonstrate the United States is exceptional. We have an obesity prevalence twice the European level and a CO2 emissions per capita level twice the European level. But it's the kind of exceptionalism we shouldn't be proud of. There are a lot of exceptional elements about America that we are deservedly proud of, but we do have to admit there's some other things that have to be considered part of the package, and food and fuel excess is part of that. I would add food and fuel excess to some other things, including the highest per capita incarceration rate in the industrial world and the lowest life expectancy at birth, the lowest voter participation rate, the highest rate of homelessness and child poverty. We have a number of things that we shouldn't be so proud of, and I'm adding food and fuel excess to that list.
Now, you look at fuel consumption as an indicator of commitment to combating climate change. What do you think will happen if the United States does not fully get on board with a policy of mitigation of climate change and moves instead toward adaptation?
Well, the end result is going to be more inequality. The United States will be tempted to pivot toward adaptation in the short run because we're much less vulnerable to climate change than just about any other advanced industrial country. We have only half as many people living in low-elevation coastal zones as Europe, and our agricultural sector is a tiny part of our economy compared to tropical countries. If we pivot toward adaptation, that's going to undercut the commitment of other large emitters, including China, which is a bigger emitter than we are already. It's going to undercut their inclination to mitigate, and so the mitigation battle will be lost. That will accelerate the onset of climate change, and that's going to make for damaging consequences for poor tropical countries in particular who can't afford to self-protect. They will, the poor tropical countries have 10 times as many people in low-elevation coastal zones as Europe, 20 times as many people as the United States. They won't be able to protect against sea level rise, and they won't be able to protect against the drying up of glacier-fed irrigation systems. So the United States, for quite some time, might be able to protect itself from accelerating climate change, but it will be leaving a large part of the Earth's population behind, confronting an accelerating threat.
And we leave it there, Rob. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Robert Perlberg, professor of political science at Wellesley College and adjunct professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School. He's the author of The United States of Excess.